Since the killing of George Floyd, people around the world have taken to the streets to protest police brutality. But Kenya, which has a notoriously brutal police force, has seen few public demonstrations. NPR's Eder Peralta explores why. And we'd like to warn you that the story includes some very disturbing details and the sounds of gunshots from a police shooting that was caught on video.
Just as protests took off in Western capitals, a handful of Kenyans showed up for a march in downtown Nairobi. Louis Magana was one of the organizers. Cops have killed too many Kenyans, he says. And during this pandemic, they have tear gassed, beaten, and killed citizens for nothing more than breaking curfew.
They will have to live a dignified life. They will have to be respected by their own state.
He looks around. Police have parked a tactical vehicle on one side of the park. And plainclothes officers with sticks begin to circle.
So you're telling me to leave?
Yes. Keep off from here, this place. Yes, keep off.
Like the United States, over the years, Kenya has been roiled by a series of police killings. When they can get out on the streets, Kenyans recite a litany of victims. Yasin Moyo, Baby Pendo, James Juma, Calvin Somondi, David Kiru. One killing that sticks with me happened in 2017 in the middle of a busy neighborhood in Nairobi. It was caught on video. It shows a teenager lying in the street, dead. A cop named Ahmed Rashid is holding another boy by his shirt, 16-year-old Mohamed Dahir Kire. Mohamed pleads for his life when the officer, Rashid, pushes his gun into his stomach and pulls the trigger. Mohamed writhes on the floor. A crowd watches as the cop puts his foot on Mohamed's back and asks for a reloaded gun. A few days later, I went to Mohamed's funeral. I was the only journalist there. The men washed Mohamed's body and covered it in a white shroud, their prayers building as they passed his body from hand to hand. The family are refugees. Mohamed's father, Dahir Roble, says they've been under constant suspicion since they left Somalia in the 90s. His son made mistakes, he says, but he did not deserve to die. As we talked, Mohamed's aunties cut in. When he was killed, Mohamed wasn't resisting.
And he surrendered and he kneeled down.
There's this thing called humanity. You just can't shoot someone like that. That's not humanity. That's insane, I'm telling you. We need justice.
Kenya's police force was founded by the British. Ruth Joyce Kaguta teaches criminology at Dedan Kimathi University of Technology in Kenya. During the armed resistance to British rule, she says, it was the police who ran concentration camps. But when Kenya gained independence in 1963, Professor Kaguta says the new African government left that force in place.
We inherited the same kind of police force with the same structures.
The same modus operandi. In fact, many of the white commanders remained because Kaguta says the aim of the new government was the same as that of the colonial rulers.
The objective was very simple, that it was to protect the interest of the administration and not the people.
A new constitution in 2010 did lead to some checks on police power, but Ahmed Rashid, the cop who killed the 16-year-old boy, is still on the force.
He's always on the street walking like a free man.
Njiri Mwangi is a human rights activist in one of the neighborhoods Rashid patrols. Her group, the Mathari Social Justice Center, counted 60 young men killed by police last year just in her neighborhood.
These people are protected by the government, by our own state. And when people are trying to apprise, there are always intimidation.
Intimidation, she says, is why Kenyans don't rise up. She gets text messages warning her to stop documenting cases. She says plainclothes officers hang out in front of her office. Police did not respond to our request for comment, but earlier this month, Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i did address police brutality, admitting some officers do make mistakes, but he said,
"They're human. Let's work with them. Let's not create a stigma."
This week, I went back to talk to Dahir Roble. Since his son's killing, he's developed high blood pressure and diabetes. He says the weeks since the killing of George Floyd have been hard. The Quran, he says, speaks of the life-giving jugular vein. So what sticks with him is the officer's knee on Floyd's neck.
Because I can remember the cop placed his foot on the dead body of my son.
Like his son, he says, Floyd begged for his life.
But the white cop did not respect the shout and the cry of George Floyd, and he decided to kill intentionally.
Robles says since his son died, he alone has spoken up. He says when he watches all those protests across the US, in Paris, in London, he thinks George Floyd is lucky because at least people cared about his death. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Nairobi.